Very few North Korean products have escaped sanctions, but over the Chinese border, fine art has found its way around the limits. Subjects by Pyongyang's painters include explosive propaganda, beautiful women, and the odd tiger portrait. And while not all of that reaches the North Korean government, it traces back to a darker side of this million-dollar industry. Specifically, Pyongyang's top art studio, Mansudae, best known for its massive sculptures of the Kim family. Mansudae came under sanctions in August when the UN branded it a cash front for North Korean military projects.
The independence of Catalonia is not going to take place. It's out of the question. We have been totally open to discuss and to debate with the Catalan government. But always it has to be, you know, within the framework of legality and the framework of the Spanish Constitution. If we accept any sort of, let's say, mediation or arbitrage, what we are setting is a very dangerous precedent for not only for Spain, but for the whole Europe.
They've revolutionized how scientists capture images of molecules to see them in action. A trio of Swiss, American, and British scientists winning this year's Chemistry Nobel on Wednesday for developing cryo-electron microscopy. Sweden's Nobel Academy saying the work by Jack Dubochet, Joachim Frank, and Richard Henderson has moved biochemistry into a new era.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program on this Thursday. It's October 5th, 2017. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, 5:11 in the morning, and another business day getting underway. Make sure you remember what you just heard in the montage. There'll be a quiz tomorrow. We'll ask you what those guys who won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry won it for. If you were taking notes for that big, long name, we'll ask you about it tomorrow. Big show this morning coming up a little bit later in the program. We're going to be talking about the tax reform plan. The American Enterprise Institute representative who's been studying tax policy will join us to go through what the pros and cons might be and who the winners and losers might be. And our thought leader is here today. It's John Horton from Associated Bank. We'll be talking a little bit about mortgages and also the Equifax breach. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, shares are a little changed in Asia, with trading calmed by public holidays in Shanghai, Hong Kong, and South Korea. Investors are waiting for further U.S. government jobs data following a report by payroll processor ADP show that hiring by private employers weakened sharply last month. The job report coming out tomorrow. The Nikkei in Japan is about 0.1% lower. Shares in Australia are lower as well this morning. In this country, futures are flat, pointing toward a flat opening on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Dow futures are literally up 1 point this morning. NASDAQ futures are up just 3. S&P all zeros with flat numbers this morning. In Europe, markets are generally mixed, with the DAX in Germany off about a quarter. The same story for the FTSE. In London, the CAC in France is off just about 0.9%. Oil is trading lower, actually just ticked higher now, up about a quarter at $50.09 a barrel. Couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. The Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen says the Fed is committed to making sure that regulations it imposes on the nation's community banks are not unduly burdensome, noting a proposed rule last week to simplify requirements governing how much capital those banks must hold. She gave a speech to the Community Banking Conference in St. Louis, says the proposed new rule on capital requirements was the latest effort by regulators to ease burdens on smaller banks. A new study says the infotainment technology that automakers are cramming into new vehicles is making drivers take their eyes off the roads and hands off the wheel for dangerously long periods of time. The study by the University of Utah examined the impact of infotainment systems on safety for the AAA's Foundation for Traffic Safety. The study says that problems with the explosion of technology, in their words, has made things worse. That explosion of technology includes a number of things. Allows drivers to check social media, email, and text. Technology also becoming more complicated to use. Some vehicles now have as many as 50 buttons on the steering wheel and dashboards that are multifunctional. It is Thursday. That means it's time for our Associated Bank Thought Leader conversation this morning. John Horton is with us this morning. He's the Vice President and Lending Manager at Associated Bank. And we're going to be talking a little bit about mortgages, the Equifax breach. Let's get underway. John, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
We got a lot to talk about today, lots of questions. First, with what everybody's talking about is the Equifax breach. I know you're in mortgages and whatever, but this kind of has hit every different industry where credit is involved. What are you hearing first from customers? Is there concern out there?
You know, there's obviously concern, Steve, and the issue is people take their credit serious, but they don't watch it as often as they should. Most people find out what their credit score is if they go to buy a house, if they go to buy a car. Discover, I know, will send you on your monthly statement, they will send you what your median credit score is. But with this Equifax issue coming up, you're getting more people that are locking down their credit that need to make sure it's taken care of. And you want to do that before it gets too late.
I've heard some scary stuff in the last couple of days about titles. Here's something you do know about, that with the information that has been breached at Equifax, the information that these hackers have gotten, they could possibly get your title and refinance your mortgage and take the equity in your home.
Yeah, and then it's a little too late. You can actually put a watch on your title, and that is something similar to your credit. But kind of going back to your point, you could, with the information they have from Equifax, they have everything they need to apply for a mortgage, to apply for a car loan, to apply for a credit card, to apply for a home equity. You could go and go to refinance your house and realize there's a lien on your property, a second mortgage on your property that you had no idea. Because the people that have breached your credit have your Social Security number, they have your previous address, they could be you. They could be you walking in and taking out a loan on your property. Would be difficult to do. But who would have thought Equifax would have been breached? So right now, there's really nothing, I think, that's too difficult to do.
This they've told us to all be on watch and on guard, but this seems like we're going to be at this level of vigilance, a high vigilance for the rest of our lives, because that's the information they've gotten.
I think you have to. I think it has to be a way of life. You know, and we were talking about credit karma earlier. That is something that's as easy as putting it on your phone. I think people don't need to be completely consumed with it. I think if it's as easy as credit karma is to look at your phone, check your title, just to make sure everybody is entitled or can receive one free credit report a year. You want to be careful when you do Google that one free credit report, because there's a lot of scammers out there that want to get your information to give you a free credit report that you may never see. Go into your bank, go into Associated Bank, get to a trusted professional, one of the bankers, to say, what do you recommend? Who do you deal with? Because Google is great, but you could Google Equifax right now and it might not be such a great idea.
Yeah. I've talked to a lot of people who are freezing their credit, who are really going for the full lockdown. Let's say we've done that and 6 months goes by, we want to come to you and refinance our home, or we're going to buy a new home. How do we unfreeze that? What's the process of that? Is it an easy process, and how does it affect your job?
It's actually very easy. We will pull people's credit if we don't realize that it's frozen. It will come up with two scores instead of three. Banks use three scores, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian. We use the middle score for your credit. All the borrower has to do, the bank cannot do it. The borrower has to call Equifax with their PIN number, which is given them by Equifax, unfreeze the credit. We can pull the credit and it freezes again. I'm not sure if it's 24 hours or a 48-hour unfreeze, but they do need to initiate that being unfrozen.
Yeah, and if you're doing all three of them, freezing all three of them, those are three calls you need to make.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk about, real quickly, mortgage rates. Is it still a good time to be putting down money on a house or refinancing?
It's always a good time, Steve. There's never a bad time. What are you
a
talking
smile
about?
On John's face.
You know what it is? The 30-year right now, given your credit appraised value, things like that, I always call it sheet pricing. Sheet pricing is the bank gets the mortgage rates depending on what the market did overnight. Here's your rate for your 30-year. 30-year rate this morning was 3.875. Again, if it's a condominium, if your credit is a little shaky, if it's a high loan-to-value, that can change. People do not realize rates are still absolutely phenomenal. One of the other big myths, I know we've talked about it before, but you can never say it again, you do not need 20% down to purchase a home. You absolutely don't.
And when is the good time on refinances? Is it 1%? When it's anything above 1%, it's a good to refinance, or is that a wives' tale?
You know, it could be a wives' tale because people may not realize what they could save. If you had a 30-year mortgage at 4.5 and you jump to a 20-year at 3.625 and your payment was lower, that would be well worth it, only because number one, your payment may be lower. Number two, you just shave 5 years or 10 years off of your property. Mm-hmm. So again, it's picking up the phone, it's the relationship, the Associated Bank call saying, is this worth it? We don't have to pull your credit. We don't have to gather any documents for you. All we need to do is ask a couple of simple questions. What's your mortgage rate? What's your principal and interest? What do you want to do? We get people that'll take cash out of their house, pay for college expenses. So it really, there's no hard and true great time to do it. That's more or less pick up the phone, have a conversation, and we'll figure it out together.
We've been hearing, it seems like we've been talking constantly about what the Federal Reserve is going to do with interest rates. Janet Yellen has said gradual increases, they might speed up. But still, here we are with these historically low interest rates. I mean, part of me, if I was out looking for a home, would say drop it now and do it now. Mm-hmm. But what do you make of it?
I make of it, I want their job. She walks in with a giant stack of paper and comes out and says, I did absolutely nothing, but next year we're going to do it five times.
Yeah.
It scares the crap out of people because they don't know what's going on. Right now they're saying the 30-year interest rate after five hikes next year could be at 5%. People don't know what to do because maybe they will, maybe they won't. You know, with that, if that does happen, it's going to affect your variable rate home equities. So people that have home equities that now are at 3.5% will see an incremental spike if they keep doing it. Credit cards, auto loans, all that is going to be tied in. I know we talked about the beginning of the year. They were supposed to do at least once a quarter for 2017. I think we've maybe seen one.
Yeah.
And then her paper says she doesn't feel like doing anything.
Yeah.
I just think there's so much going on. And every time they say they're going to do it, you get another effect in the market where it makes it go sideways and home buyers and everyone. I wish I had the answer.
Is the lack of inventory for homes out there still impacting the mortgages coming across your desk?
You know, we're seeing a lack of inventory. We're also seeing our purchase and new construction business is just killing it. It's surprising every year people have faith in Mother Nature that want to start building homes in October in Chicago. I greatly appreciate it. I don't understand it. Last year, for instance, builders did not stop. So it has been extremely steady.
Let's talk about something else. Speaking of Chicago, Chicago is out looking for Amazon to build HQ2, Headquarters 2 here. They put together a dream team to go after this and includes a bunch of top CEOs. If something like this landed in Chicago, and I think it's 50,000 jobs, a $5 billion investment in the community that gets this, what does that do to the housing market?
You know, it's huge. It kind of is when Google moved downtown. You know, when Google was moving part of their headquarters to the city, you saw a lot of those condos in that area increase because they knew the demand was there. I think what you're going to find, and the nice thing is that, you know, the couple of the requirements they had is it's close to public transportation. It's close to O'Hare. I think what you'll see is you might not have everybody living downtown. It may make the housing market in the suburbs, close to the metro, BNSF. I think instead of affecting just a smaller area downtown, you might see that affect the outreach into the metropolitan area as well.
Yeah, I've seen anywhere from 8 million square feet is where they'd like to expand.
That?
And this is huge. And not only that, but these 50,000 jobs, I mean, every indication is these are going to be high-paying jobs, up to maybe $100,000 a year. I would bet anybody that has property next to where this is going to go, or as you mentioned, along any one of these rail lines or, you know, public transportation lines, that's going to be a boon for them.
Oh, yeah. You know, you look at it as far as Amazon, like you said, expand up to 8 million. That's just huge. It's crazy. But you look at the other factors, like you said, which I think is interesting. Instead of just Amazon and 50,000 jobs, all the other neighborhoods, the restaurants, everyone's going to benefit from it. It's not just going to be the Amazon employees.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the trends that are emerging in real estate markets. I saw a report that smaller to mid-sized cities are seeing their markets kick up, especially here in the Midwest. Why is that?
You know, I was reading something about that yesterday, and I was surprised. Salt Lake City posted some of the fastest job growths in the nation last year. I don't know if people are getting out of the big metropolitan areas, getting into the smaller towns. I was surprised Nashville is 20%, running 20% slower than the rest. Nashville's kind of picked up a lot of steam. But I think you might get a lot of people that want to get out of the hustle and bustle, the Chicagos, the New Yorks. Some people also say they are at a point where they're kind of at the plateau. You run into a Chicago market or some other big metropolitan area, they've hit the plateau of pricing that some people can't afford to move here. So they could have a very similar career in a smaller town, and everybody benefits.
Yeah, I saw one figure that said it may be 20% cheaper to live in a community like that, especially you mentioned Nashville. That's like one of the hot communities in the country right now.
I was
now.
Real surprised when I saw that.
Yeah, and but to have all of the amenities of a big city and be a mid-sized city and 20% less, that would be kind of attractive to me.
It'd be real attractive. You get everything you want, and the cost of living is a little cheaper.
There is some bad news, though. I mean, I guess it's bad news for cities like big cities like Chicago and Los Angeles. That was kind of what the next topic would be is funding for real estate and where it's coming from. We're seeing a big influx from the international markets.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that as well. You are seeing the international markets move in quickly, and it's good and it's bad. You know, you're looking for money outside of the United States, which obviously is nice to see, but you kind of like to keep it here in America.
Let's talk. Can we go back to mortgages and that sort of thing?
I'd love to.
Do we focus on what coming up here at the end of the year? If we're sitting on the fence, you've sort of indicated now's the best time to jump in.
Get off the fence.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you ask people all the time, what are you waiting for? Why haven't you called Associated Bank? What are you doing? Because people wait. And we really like to break it down, excuse me, as far as a payment goes. If your rate is this, but you're waiting for this rate, it might be a $12 a month difference in your payment. Is losing the house of your dreams worth $12 a month? You know, you really, and it goes back, and I know I'm repeating myself, but it's that conversation and the relationship with your banker. What are you waiting for? Rates are great. There's houses on the market. If you're really in the need to do it, do it. Because I don't think it's going to get any better, but I've been saying that for 6 years, and it continually keeps getting better and better.
You know, one of the things you have been saying that's actually coming true is the number of millennials that are starting to buy homes again.
Absolutely.
I saw this story about the millennials trying to find yards for their dogs and all kinds of stuff like that. Are you seeing any kind of proof that that is actually happening?
You know, it's funny you brought up the dog. We were no kids, just a lot of animals, so, you know, good for them. But we did have a gentleman that was looking, and one of his big needs was he wanted a yard big enough to barbecue and big enough for his two dogs. That was really, plus he wanted a nice house, but one of his things, he wanted a family-friendly neighborhood for his dogs, and then he wanted to be able to barbecue. And their average price point, the millennials are buying homes, is right around the $450,000 to $500,000 purchase price. So they're spending a little bit of cash for their dogs.
That's all of the money they've been saving sleeping on their mom's couch.
Exactly.
John, good to see you as always, and a great conversation. We'll see you next time.
All right, man. Thanks, Steve. Good being here.
And John Horton is Vice President and Senior Lending Manager at Associated Bank in our Thought Leader conversation this morning. We will continue our conversation with John after the bell and post that in the podcast of our program later at WGNradio.com. And remember, you can listen to all of our past Thought Leadership conversations at associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership and at WGNradio.com. Don't forget to follow Associated Bank for latest banking news and other economic news at Associated Biz on Twitter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition. The budget deficit may prove to be one of the biggest obstacles to the tax reform tax cut plan being offered by President Trump and top Republicans. One leading Senate hawk saying this week that he may not support that if it continues to push up the deficit in any way, he says. Senator Bob Corker is the senator we're talking about. The administration has said two things must happen for revenue losses to be offset. One is economic growth to generate new taxes. But there's a lot of disagreement about whether or not that could happen or not, whether or not it's a too rosy of an economic picture that we are expecting, at least the Republicans are expecting. Let's bring in our guest to talk about this morning. Aparna Mater is an economics policy scholar at the nonpartisan American Enterprise Institute. Aparna, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. Great to be here.
The conversation, I mean, I know there's been a lot of conversations over the last week. People are still sort of digging into this plan to see what it is. Let's start with the budget deficit. Is that going to be an obstacle?
Absolutely. So the current framework, the way they talk about simply cutting the corporate tax rate, we're giving investment expensing to companies. We're talking about some amount of rate cuts at the bottom as well. it does seem to be, it's been scored to be adding about $2 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years. So there is an absolute worry that, you know, this is not a plan that's going to make up revenues very quickly. And if this is how it proceeds, we will add hugely to debts and deficits. I guess the question is, you know, how much do we get out of the economic growth bang, you know, to make up that revenue?
And that's the other part of this that's in disagreement. I've seen so many different varying opinions of that. I mean, how much do we get out of a plan like this, realistically?
You know, it's realistically, it's very hard to predict because, you know, we don't have the economics to say if you did a 15 percentage point cut in the corporate tax rate, you would get, let's say, you know, a 3 percentage point increase in GDP or GDP growth. So it's very tough to say, and people are you know, looking at data and looking at different tax reforms and concluding what they like. Honestly, I think they, you know, it's hard to predict what would happen, because when you're talking about something like economic growth, you know, a lot of things have to go right for us to get those growth levels. So I personally do think that cutting the corporate tax, you know, bringing about more reforms on the business side will absolutely lead to higher investment and should lead to higher jobs and wages. But what the long-run impact on economic growth is, I think, is harder to predict. So I think you would get a lot more consensus if you said getting the corporate tax rate in line with what's happening in the OECD economies and other developed countries. You know, I think that's an absolute priority. That was a priority for Democrats as well, you know, under President Obama. But what happens in the long run to growth, I think, is harder to predict.
One of the other talking points on that note is we're hearing a lot about people saying, well, you know, the corporations will just give whatever they save to shareholders and not do that investment. Is there any research out there that shows what these corporations might do with this tax cut?
So when people talk about the impact on shareholders, I think it's really coming from the tax holiday, the repatriation tax holiday that we had in the U.S. In 2005, 2006, where we told our multinationals, well, for 1 year, we will let you get back all the profits that you're storing overseas at a much lower rate of 5% compared to, you know, the 35% rate. And what happened then was that, you know, some research suggests that, well, yeah, money did come back, but a lot of it was just distributed to shareholders. Now, to my mind, you know, that's not the ideal sort of, you know, experiment to look at, because here you're talking about a long-term, a permanent change in the corporate tax rate, and companies may behave very differently. I mean, we know from economics research that companies respond to tax incentives. You know, we see that around the country today. If you offer you know, a company to come and set up a store downtown because you give them a tax incentive, they will do it. And that does create jobs in local communities, in cities. So why wouldn't it work in, you know, in our tax reform plan? So I do think that if we got our headline rates more in line with the rest of the developed world, if we created the right incentives for companies to make those investments, they would happen. And I do think that it will lead to jobs and wages going up. And my own research shows that, you know, typically when you look around the world, when you look at different countries that have high tax rates, high corporate tax rates, actually end up with lower worker wages. So I do believe that narrative. I do believe you will get the positive, you know, economic impacts. And it's hard to predict how much, but I think there will be, you know, some positive change coming out of those this particular tax reform.
Advocates for the middle class are concerned about one part of this tax plan that would cut the ability to deduct state and local taxes. They're saying that would be a tax increase for many middle-income households. Is your research showing the same?
Well, you know, so there's a particular chunk. If you look at the Tax Policy Center report, there's a particular group making between $150,000 to $300,000 that might be, you know, slightly hurt by not having the state and local tax deduction and also losing, you know, the personal exemptions and so on. Again, I think, you know, we still need to wait for more details, because the plan does mention that we will hike up or expand the child tax credit, and that might help, you know, some of these households make up a little bit more money. On the other hand, you know, the whole point of tax reform is really somewhere to broaden the base. I mean, it is about simplifying and doing away with a lot of these deductions, and there are people who depend on them. But at the same time, if we're talking about, oh, we're losing revenues and we need to make it up, I would rather that some of that tax burden went to the higher income households, which, you know, some of these people are in. I wouldn't say it depends a lot on where you live and how middle class you feel, but this is not the bottom, you know, earners. This is not the bottom people earning $40,000 or less. You know, some of the tax burden should come from the relatively better off households. So yeah, doing away with itemized deductions will hurt some families, and you know, at the same time, they might experience the rate cut from the top rate going down from 39 to 35, or you know, the rate coming to 25. So we still have to sort of work out the details. I do think that most people on average will either not be hurt or will you know, experience a tax cut.
You've probably seen this in action. There's a lot of people pointing back to the times that we've tried tax reform before. It's very difficult, isn't it? What kind of road lies ahead?
You know, so I think the road is tougher because of the political challenges that Republicans will face in trying to push through a tax package that, you know, seems to benefit the wealthy more. So I do think that will be tough for them, and which is why I, you know, they've left details out. I think, you know, having the really top rate be, say, much higher than 39% might get some Democrats on board. Doing away with, you know, some itemized deductions or base broadening even more on the business side, I think might get some Democrats on board. So the real challenge now is to say, well, you know, we really care about, Republicans really care about the business side and the corporate tax cuts and you know, the business side reforms. But what is it that Democrats would be willing to come on board with? And, you know, one of the ideas that I've had and a lot of people that I've spoken to have is look at a carbon tax. You know, a carbon tax is something that Democrats like. It would be a huge revenue raiser and might allow Democrats to get on board with the corporate tax cuts that Republicans want.
Is the idea that this might be done by the end of the year, is that an outrageous idea or is it possible?
It sounds optimistic to me. I was at a tax briefing yesterday where they mentioned they were trying to get everything done by December. But given where they are right now with the lack of, you know, details and sort of very little effort, I think, right now to get Democrats on board with this. I mean, it sounds very ambitious to me. I do think, you know, if they manage to get more people on board, it could happen. But it sounds ambitious to me, honestly.
Aparna, very good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for your insight in all of this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Aparna Mater is with the Inter-American Enterprise Institute. She's an economics policy scholar there. You can find more information on their website at aei.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, futures are flat as we head toward the opening bell later this morning. Dow futures just up 3, NASDAQ and S&P futures up just a fraction. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Well, good morning. After a late night drive back from Madison, Wisconsin, where we attended the World Dairy Expo Night of Honors dinner, the show continues through Saturday. 2,300 of the world's finest dairy cows on display at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, and several sales and shows from the various breeds will be taking place today. But last night at the dinner, the Dairy Woman of the Year, Marilyn Hershey of Our Joy Farms in Cochranville, Pennsylvania. She's a dairy farmer, an industry leader, a published author. And then they honored the Dairyman of the Year, Charles Ollum from Turlock, California, one of the founders of Hillmar Cheese, which is now exported around the world. Ben Bransel, retiring Secretary of Agriculture for Wisconsin, was also honored last night for his work in the dairy industry as the Secretary of Agriculture and involvement with the Farm Service Agency. The International Person of the Year, Derek Frigott, who is the owner of Jisex International in Jersey, Channel Islands, United Kingdom, spent a lifetime promoting the Jersey breed. And all in all, it was a great night and a beautiful day yesterday for attending World Dairy Expo. It goes through Saturday evening. And that's it. I'm Orion Samuelson. Have a great day.
You too, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday. It's October 5th. A couple of major government reports due out today. Labor Department reports on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. The Commerce Department reports on U.S. factory orders for August, as well as the U.S. trade gap for the same month. And Freddie Mac has this week's report on average U.S. mortgage rates, some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, October 5th.